Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Talk to any parent about schooling their kids, and you'll get an earful. Talk to teachers, and it's the same. No question. Bad or good, it is certainly one of the most challenging times for education since schools were first built in Northumberland in the mid-19th century. Children across the school board have not entered a building since March break. Over the past 3 months, teachers, parents, and kids were forced to pivot from a traditional face-to-face learning environment to online. None of it has been easy. As the school board navigates these tricky waters, it also recently released its plans for the future of those buildings nobody is occupying right now. It is called the Accommodation Plan. It is done every 5 years. And it deals with all aspects of keeping schools opened or closed. Here is my conversation with Public School Board Chairperson Diane Lloyd as we discuss these topics. I'd like to welcome today to Consider This Diane Lloyd, Chairperson of the Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board. Welcome to Consider This.
Good morning.
A new accommodation plan was recently approved, but before we get into the guts of this, can you tell listeners what an accommodation plan is and why it's an important document?
Our accommodation plan is renewed every 5 years. It's actually a living document. It is important with the number of schools that we have to have a document like this. It looks at the facility condition index, which means the boilers, the windows, you know, all of the big items in a school, to see what kind of condition they're in. And it keeps tabs on, it gives it a percentage. So if you got a really low percentage on this plan, then your school's in pretty good condition. If you start to see, you know, 50s and 60s and 70%, then that means there's a lot of work that hasn't been done. We have to have a plan in order to ensure that all of our schools are looked after. If we didn't have something written down or a book, we wouldn't be able to, I'm not sure that we'd be able to make sure we could hit every school. We deal with this. It comes down to, it helps us when we're thinking about what schools we can keep and what schools we need to maybe consolidate because of lower enrollment. If a school were to get below an 80% capacity rate, then we would take a look at it to see whether or not it's viable, how we could move more students into that school, or if not, how we would work with that lack of enrollment. By the same token, if a school got to be over 120%, then we'd be looking at it to see if we need to find someplace else or build an addition on that school. When a school gets under capacity, it's difficult for us because we're given so much money in order to put resources into a classroom where a teacher would, including, you know, the teacher and all the things that they need in order to teach the class. And we're given a different, smaller pot of money to keep our buildings up. So if we've got a school that's, you know, 20% or more under capacity, then we're having to take some of the money out of the teaching resources in order to keep that building up. And that doesn't serve students well. So it's something that's difficult for our parents to understand lots of times, but this document serves a good purpose in our schools, and it's something that we do have, and it's a living document too. So every year we would get that document out and we would look at it to update it. If a school's had a lot of repair work done, then that facility index would go down and that school, you know, would be in better condition. But it's something that we have to have in order to keep track of all of our schools and what we need to do to ensure that the population in our schools is proper.
Now, I noticed in the report that there was a pattern of growth that has been predicted. And I know that that's not always been the case in the past. Can you tell us what are the changes that are leading to this predicted growth?
I think for years we had declining enrollment, and then you have to kind of look at how societies evolve. So years ago, people had lots and lots of children, and we built, you know, very large schools to accommodate those children. Now people tend to have two children or maybe less. I think it's actually less than one child per household now if you do it on an average. So we got to a point where we had too many classroom spaces. So we went through a lot of years where we were closing schools, and you know, that's a very difficult thing for a community. But like I said, we have to ensure that we keep as much money as possible in resources in the classroom instead of in buildings. So it was necessary to do that. But we've actually reached a point now where we had pretty much completed that work. And now with growth in different communities, we're starting into a period where we have more students. So we're having to look again at how we're going to accommodate our schools to look after those, you know, increase in students from subdivisions and new areas of growth.
As with any of these kinds of documents, parents often worry about potential school closures. Are there any schools in Northumberland being considered for closure at this time?
No, there are no schools being considered for closure. The ministry actually has a moratorium on closures right now. But I think that in Northumberland, the schools are in pretty good shape. I mean, we do have to look at, we talk about Port Hope High School all the time. It has a low enrollment and it's very, very much under the on the ground capacity. And we've looked at many ways to try and use that space. And we're still trying to find, you know, creative ways to use that space. That high school is very important to that community, and we're doing all that we can to try and make it work. But there are no plans at this time for school closures.
I noticed, though, in the report, you mentioned Merwin Greer Public School is being monitored. And although Sierra Gummo Public School is the nearest option, there's also such things as what are called boundary reviews. Could you explain what that is and how that is going to affect the future of Merwin Greer Public School?
I'm not sure how it will affect Merwin Greer, but certainly Merwin Greer is just, you know, it's just on the edge of being under capacity. Whenever we have to talk about a school review, the community comes out and they always want us to look at boundary changes. And, you know, you can see that, you can understand their reasoning. You know, they can, if we just move the boundaries out, we would have more students. But sometimes what people don't think about is that when you move the boundaries out to improve that school, you take them away from another school. So you're just transferring the problem to somewhere else. Can boundary changes help? Sometimes they can. You know, occasionally you could make a couple of boundary changes, which might help, but usually that's not the case.
Now, I also know that Murray Centennial Public School in the Quinty West Murray Ward is experiencing some changes. Can you talk a little bit about that school and its future?
I think that one of the unfortunate things that we have to deal with in education, we have to deal with exactly the number of students that we have for a school at any given time. So we could know that down the road, you know, maybe next year or the year after, we're going to have 100 more students in that area. But the ministry won't allow us to build a new school or to build on an addition until it actually happens. So people sometimes wonder, you know, we build a new school and then suddenly we've got portables on it. Well, that's what happens. We build it according to the population at the time, and then next year more people move in and we have to build more. I think that's something that we have to monitor each year as we move forward and try to make the decision at the right time about how we're going to deal with that, whether or not it would require an addition or at some point maybe it would require a new school in the area, but it's too soon to tell that right now. And that's why this accommodation plan is good, because every year we'll get an update on that situation and be able to make a decision.
Are there any plans for new schools or development on some of the vacant properties in Northumberland?
I'm not aware of any plans for new schools right now. The ministry certainly it gets involved when there's a new school. We need a lot of approvals in order to put a new school in. They will only put a new school in when the population warrants it, or if you have a school. Sometimes if you've got two schools in an area that are not in great condition or they're both under capacity, the government will let us put those two schools together into one community and build a new building. But other than that, it's very difficult to get the money for a new school. I mean, as you know, taxpayer dollars are spread thinly now, and you know, they're trying always to look at absolute need before they spend them.
But you do have a number of properties in Northumberland that you could develop on if it was necessary.
We do. And every time there's a new development anywhere, a piece of property is set aside for a school. At some point, we either build a school on it. Sometimes the property goes back to the developer.
There's far more growth in Peterborough and Clarington than in Northumberland. Where does that leave us in terms of how the board views going forward in terms of schools and capacity and new schools and closures and all that sort of thing? How do those factors play into how the board looks at Northumberland?
Well, I hope that it's not about whether there's more growth in Clarington or more growth in Peterborough. I hope that our decisions are all based on the total number of students we have and that a fair share of all resources go to each area. I don't think because Peterborough or Clarington might have more growth, they might get a new school sooner because of that growth, but they shouldn't be getting any more with regard to resources for in-classroom teaching.
I'd like to shift gears a little bit now and talk a bit about the impact of the pandemic has had on the school board. I know back in March you released a pandemic plan based on the assumptions that schools would remain open and then the province closed them. But what is going on at the board right now in terms of trying to address all of the pressures and changes that have been caused by the pandemic?
It's certainly been a difficult time for everyone. You know, we're all at home now. We're used to being out and doing our jobs and being in the community and having interactions with people, having social interactions with people. Now we're trying to do everything like you and I are doing right now, you know, via computer with a video conference. And that's difficult, I think, even as adults to kind of move into that kind of setting. And it's difficult. It's been difficult, I'm sure, for our teachers because they're used to having their 20, 25 kids right in front of them where they can see what's going on and they can have all the interaction they need. They can see who needs help and who doesn't. And now they're trying to deal with the same number of students somehow over the internet. And that's got to be difficult. And we've also got students who don't have internet, and we've tried to put computers into the homes where they don't have internet. But by the same token, some children don't have internet, and even if you give them a computer, they don't have Wi-Fi. They don't have the ability to connect, or they live in an area where connectivity is bad. So we can allow them to come to our school, and they can sit in the parking lot and connect through our Wi-Fi. But do they have a parent who can go and sit with them? Do they have a car? You know, some children have to have actual physical paperwork taken to their house and picked up after to be marked. So it's very difficult for us and for our teachers in that light. I think they're doing a wonderful job under very difficult circumstances. We're learning together. Our principals and vice principals meet with senior staff every week to talk about what's working and what's not to try and improve the system. I just think it's a difficult time. Our students are having a hard time. Our teachers are having a hard time. I think there are mental health issues with staying at home and not having those wonderful interactions you have with people normally. We've had our professional staff put some mental health activities online to try and help people with that. There's just a whole host of issues that people never thought of, and we're all learning together. So it's been difficult, but I think it's working. It's working fairly well, and I have to applaud our teachers because I know that this is a difficult thing to do. I'm sure it's very hard to keep track of that number of students online.
Is the board having any ongoing discussions with the province about reopening schools? Can you bring us up to date in terms of any of those talks?
Well, for the most part, we haven't been having chats with them because I think the directive's going to come from them. You know, they're not, I don't believe that they're asking us what we think. I believe that they're dealing with health officials to try and determine whether or not it's safe for students to go back to school. So while we all would like to see our students back in school, I think that we have to put health and safety first. So the ministry is making those decisions based on what they're hearing from health authorities. We have heard... We've heard that school will probably go back in September. We haven't had details on what that looks like. If you take a look at some of the places around the world, if you would, that have opened their schools, it's been very different. I watched one the other day where students had to come to the door and somebody would be there and take their temperature. And if their temperature was okay, they could come in and they could go and sanitize their hands and get a mask that they had to wear all day. The seats were aligned so they could be 2 meters apart and only half the class could come on any given day because if you've got to be that far apart, they don't all fit in. And then if they're out on the playground, they could only put so many on the playground at once. So, you know, I don't know what our system will look like when we open up, but, you know, we've been kind of watching what's happening in other places and we can only wait and see at this point.
But doesn't it bother you a little bit, though, that they're not coming to you and saying, you know, what do you guys think or what would you suggest or what are some of your ideas or what are your concerns?
I think they know our concerns, you know, and I do get your point, you know, let's have a conversation about it. But neither the ministry nor us have the final say on whether or not it's safe from a health perspective. So I think that has to be first. At some point, they may come to us and say, you know, the health authorities have said whatever they're going to say, and now work with us to see how we can make that work in our schools. And that would be nice if they did that. And it may be that they're just waiting to see what they have to deal with. I mean, we've got the summer coming up. The teaching that's going on now will soon be through for the summer, except for some summer school programs. So maybe during that time, they can really lay out a good plan about what schools will look like in the fall.
Do you feel that the quality of education is being maintained through this period?
I think everybody's doing the best that they can. I don't believe that we can teach as well online as we can teach in a classroom. I think when students come back, that our teachers are going to have to take some time to evaluate where the gaps in learning are and to provide or come up with a plan on how to fill those or bridge those gaps. I don't think that you would ever be able to teach as well online, especially to small children, as you could in a classroom.
What are you hearing from parents?
Well, parents, you know, they've been good. They really have. And I think part of the reason is because this is a world pandemic. This is a pandemic. It's affecting the whole world. So people are worried about that too. Would they prefer their children to be in school? I'm sure they would. And so would we. We hear about specific, like some things, like right now, graduations are difficult for parents. Children have been in school from, you know, up to grade 8 in some schools and then up to grade 12 in other schools. They've been with those students all through many, many years of going to school together. When we left school in March for the March break, they never went back. So they've never had that opportunity to be together again, and now they won't have what we would call a proper graduation under the way we would normally do it. They're not going to be able to get together and have a party and sit shoulder to shoulder and walk across a stage and have their parents and grandparents sit in the audience and applaud them. And I think that's very difficult. We do get a lot of people that are concerned about this, missing this, you know, celebration or milestone in their children's lives. And it is difficult, but you can never get to the point where you say that graduation is more important than considering the health issues. So teachers are coming up with some novel ways to do graduations. You know, they're doing them online, they're putting lawn signs out, they're, you know, I'm not just sure what all they are, but they're doing some kind of ceremony that will be online. It's not going to be the same. But I also try to tell students that, you know, while this is difficult, this is a very unusual times that we're in. And this is something that they're going to be memorialized in their minds and society's mind for the rest of time. And they're going to look back on that in years to come and know that they were a part of it and they had a front row seat and where they were and what grade they were in and how it affected them. And I think that when they look back on it in years to come, they'll see it differently than they do right now. Right now, they're just missing a graduation, you know, and their children, and they find that very difficult.
When it comes time to make whatever changes are going to be made come the fall, is there going to be a need for the provincial government to make major investments in public education? And if so, to what extent?
The question is a little bit difficult. If school were to resume exactly the same as it was in March when we left it, I don't see that there would be a great difference. We would just go back to what we do. If school resumes and we have to somehow social distance in our schools, and maybe we can't, you know, I mean, I don't know what that would look like. Maybe all students don't go to school on the same day. There would be a number of things that would cost more money. I mean, you'd either need more schools or more time or more teaching or more something, and that would cost money. If the pandemic were to continue, I think there would be a greater need for cash, because at some point they're going to have to ensure, if we have to continue teaching online, that all students have access to online learning. So whether that means ensuring that all of Ontario has Wi-Fi and perhaps that Wi-Fi is free for students, I don't know what the answer is, but I think that you can't leave some students out on the edges just because they don't happen to have Wi-Fi in the house or a computer. So I think the costs, and then we might have to ensure that every student had a computer too. You know, right now they can share one because it's relatively short time. But if you had to do that for a long time, then you would have to ensure that every student had that. What about the children who get a lot of help from parents? What about the children whose parents work full time or maybe don't understand the work they're doing? But there's just so many variables. But I think if school went back in the format it was back in March, I don't see that there would be a lot of change in cost. But any other scenario, there would be.
Do you have anything that you'd like to say to parents right now as we go forward?
I think I would just tell them to hang in there. I know it's very difficult for parents right now. Parents are trying to do their job from home. They're trying to do their normal work that they would do within their home. And now they're trying to teach their own children. I mean, we know that teachers are sending the work home or they're getting it online, but still, it's the parent that's there making sure that they understand, making sure the computer works, you know, helping them cope with what's going on. So I think I just would say to hang in there. We understand that this is difficult and we're doing our best to get you as much information as you need and provide as much education as we can to your children. And we're hopeful, as you are, that school will resume normally as soon as possible.
Diane Lloyd, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today. I truly appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
That was Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board Chairperson Diane Lloyd. I want to thank both my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. While we are busy self-isolating, it's important to remember the world has not stopped entirely. If you know of a good story or have an idea for a story, please let me know. You can email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com and include as much detail as possible, especially contact information. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, you can also email me at that same address. Or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.